Okay, how about a final hour of phone calls with Lynn McTaggart as we talk about her work, the bond, the field. We'll be back in a moment at Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Lynn McTaggart with us, and your phone calls as well, and we will take many. She's live in the United Kingdom. When intention became, I guess, visible to science, Lynn, because I think they're aware of this, was there any specific episode, do you think, that made people wake up and go, my gosh, there's something to this?
Well, I think it wasn't one amazing episode. I think there were lots of episodes. I think that scientists who have been working kind of quietly without fanfare. They've done studies showing that intention can affect everything from single-celled organisms to, you know, other human beings. I think, you know, one of the more interesting experiments done, you know, years ago was done by the late Elizabeth Targ when she worked with AIDS victims, and she had healers all across America sending intention to those patients. Now, this was at the time before they had protease inhibitors, so AIDS was basically a death sentence. I think this was in the 80s. And she divided groups in half and had half sent intention by different healers of every variety, from, you know, shamans to, you know, to Christian healers and everything in between. And they would trade patients, and all they had, they'd never met the patients, all they had was a T-cell count and a photo and, you know, and a name. And, you know, without a doubt, the patients who were, you know, sent intention got better in every way. I mean, they had, you know, fewer of them died. They had shorter stays in hospital. They had higher T cell counts, everything. And I think that caused a lot of attention. But as I say, in the main, it's just been, you know, people finding a bucket of earth, you know, each of these scientists, but nobody having the nerve essentially to declare it a continent, you know. And so that was one of the reasons I wrote the intention experiment, and I'm carrying out these experiments, because I was frustrated to find that there were very few really good experiments looking at the power of group intention. You know, there was a lot of tantalizing stuff, like the stuff from the transcendental meditation people, but nothing conclusive. And so I wanted to find out, you know, can our thoughts collectively change the world?
And can they?
Well, it looks like it. From, you know, we, you know, when you do scientific studies, when I work with these scientists, I'm not a scientist, but I'm, you know, I'm a science writer, but I've been working with scientists at Arizona and the University of Arizona and Penn State and many other places like that, University of California. And what I find is, you know, you have to creep toward conclusions, because, you know, each one shows you something a little bit more. And certainly if you look at our body of evidence, the 24 studies, they're very, very persuasive that it works.
All right, let's go to some calls here. We'll go to Traverse City, Michigan to get things going. East of the Rockies, Jason's with us on Coast to Coast. Hello, Jason. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm a short-time listener. I've only been listening about 8 months, but this is the fourth time I called, and I'm glad to get through when I want to. So then I guess that might be evidence to the contrary, that maybe one person's intentions can make things happen, because, you know, here I am alone, and I got through on the phone. Nice to talk to you. But, you know, I think I really love the subject, and I see this stuff in my everyday life. Once you realize the universe is like a breathing, living thing, and you can throw your desires into it, you don't realize, you know, when you're looking, say, doing anything, say you're looking for a new house, and you're driving along the road just someplace looking for a new house, and say you want a house with green vinyl siding or something, you can, your thoughts and your mind can change the physical reality, because I believe the reality is more of an accumulation of thought than a cold, dead physical thing moving through time. And I just love the subject tonight.
Well, me too. It's one of those grand subjects indeed. And you know, Lynn, you know, this, I guess, was around since the universe was formed, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the ancients understood this. You know, they understood the universe was alive and that we were, you know, central to it, and that consciousness, you know, although they wouldn't have called it that, was a living thing, too, that had an effect on the world. You know, this is nothing new to ancient cultures. It's only really with the development of so-called modern science that we've believed that we are all separate from it, and that we are, you know, we are separate and discrete entities, you know, with, and that we operate according to fixed laws. And we don't understand about that influence, but that whole science is now, the science that's coming through now, is actually proving what the ancients have understood for centuries.
Next up, we go to Susan in Santa Monica. Susan, go ahead.
I guess that's why I'm up, because I'm a Hopi Indian.
Uh-huh.
I would like to thank you, Lynn, for the work that you have done for mankind, bringing this presence, awareness back to people through mainstream science, which is itself evolving and changing as we know it. George, I love your show. I love your listeners. Thank you. I also liked intention-focused light or dark. You know, we have to keep that in mind about light. We need dark for light for dark, yes?
Absolutely. I think that's so important, is the idea of framing things positively and just focusing. I mean, there's so much focus now on darkness and on, you know, on the problems that we now face. And that's, you're absolutely right, that it's really important to really focus on outcome and focus on what we can do and not what we can't do.
Lynn, do you think good beats out evil all the time?
I think that usually good is, it doesn't necessarily, as we talked about earlier, intention has no morality, and that evil can be just as powerful. And they've shown that in studies, George. They've had studies of Qigong masters where they've used, you know, destroying mind, which is Qigong for negative intention. And they found that that can make plants wither. And positive intention can make the plants grow. And the same thing, you know, they've had effects, positive and negative, on humans, too. I think the good thing is that, you know, as I said earlier, most evil minds, a lot of evil minds, are just very disordered. They don't have the kind of focus that works really well with intention. They're not Qigong masters. So in that sense, you know, good is oftentimes more focused. But not always. So I wouldn't say that one beats out over the other. I think we just all have to make sure that it does.
It's fascinating, though, how it just plays itself out, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, and the more you see this, the more it completely revolutionizes your view of how things work and how things work in your life. And then it opens up so much possibility. And I think that's what's not available to people. They really do think, you know, they are not the masters of their own fate, but they are. And that's really my message today, particularly in a small group.
You've written some controversial stories saying that some surgeries aren't necessary. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, this is the other work that I do, George. I have this news. I had a newsletter called What Doctors Don't Tell You, and last September we turned it into a magazine because we felt, you know, as we've been talking in this conversation, that the general media is being, you know, is censoring more and being controlled by large corporate interests. And so a lot of information that's really important about health isn't getting through. And if you take, I'm going to say something really controversial now, because, you know, I've been doing that for 24 years. But if you take the case of Angelina Jolie, for instance, now I have huge admiration for her. I think she's fabulous because she uses her celebrity and fame for public good so much of the time.
Sure.
And I think she was really well-intended, and her doctors were well-intended to tell her that, you know, that she should have this just-in-case double mastectomy. But to be honest, I've studied the medical literature now for a quarter of a century, and we know how to research this stuff, and the research doesn't bear this out because their advice was really an old science. They were basically saying if you've got certain genes, that is a blueprint for automatic cancer. And the science doesn't bear that out. The new science doesn't bear that out. It shows that genes are less, far less important. They're just like the keys of a piano waiting to be played. And the only thing that plays them are certain environmental influences. You know, the food you eat, the water you drink, the friends you have, the sum total of how you live your life. That affects other atoms above the gene that in turn determine whether those keys get played or not. And so I think what they told her was wrong, because most people with a family history, most women with a family history of breast cancer will never get the disease.
Yeah, well, do you think she jumped the gun too soon? But it was her life.
Sadly, I do, because most breast cancer develops in women without a family history of disease. I mean, for instance, one big, big study looked at, it was a study of hormone replacement therapy, and it looked at, you know, women with the breast cancer gene she has, and they figured that there would be much more breast cancer with women with that gene, and they found that that was not the case. The only thing that mattered was whether or not the women were taking HRT. That raised the breast cancer risk, an environmental factor, not the gene itself.
Let's go next to Sly in Clinton, Maryland, east of the Rockies. Hi, Sly.
Well, good evening, George. I love your show. I've been listening for so long, and you've been an awesome replacement for Art. All the guys are great. I called tonight because I'm just fascinated that Linda thinks she's discovered something new in the power of intention. I believe that we've known about this for years. It's called faith. And little churches, little communities, little bonds of people coming together and praying for the best and hoping to change their lives and be better people. That's what's kept this country alive, is our faith. And one more thing, and she said that corporations have gotten too big. I just want to say corporations were never around when our founding fathers wrote the Constitution. And the problem with our government today is that corporations have more power than citizens, and that citizens have lost regard for their constitution, and they're just not paying attention to what's going on. Washington's corrupt, and that's all I can say about that.
Let's talk about faith, if we can, for a moment. There's no question that's important, Lynn.
Absolutely, and I want to clarify that I don't think I've discovered anything new. I think science is only beginning to demonstrate what has been ancient belief. As I said earlier, is that things like faith, you know, ancient cultures have always understood the power of intention. As I say, Jesus and the Essenes were using intention in healing circles, you know, thousands of years ago. So it is nothing new. I think what's new now is just being able to scientifically quantify that this stuff works. And so, and I absolutely agree that we need to take more account of ancient practice and wisdom like faith, rather than the kind of cold scientific view that we've been given in the last couple hundred years. Which we're demonstrating now, you know, that even people like Darwin were wrong.
Let's go to Skip in Anaheim, California, first-time caller. Skip, go ahead.
Hi, I'm pleased to be on tonight. The last three shows have just been off the chart. I have a question. Why, when everybody thinks as one whole, actually comes out like it happens. Everybody thinks the same thing and prays together or whatever, thinks the same thing, it actually as a percentage comes true, or it helps that person or whoever, you know what I'm talking about, you know what I mean?
How come if we do it as a group and we send intention to somebody with a problem with a healing challenge, that works?
Exactly.
Why does it work? You mean, why does it work as a group? I can't say for certain, but what seems to be the effect is it is that effect of all of those minds operating as one and resonating as one. What I can tell you is there's been some scientific evidence looking at what happens when people do something with a singular goal. And, you know, even whether it's playing music together or whatever, and they find when they do that, their brain waves start operating in synchrony. They start operating like all resonating at the same frequency. And the same thing, they did another study of Oxford rowers, and they found that when they were rowing together, they had a higher pain threshold than when they were rowing alone. So I think the power of using the group means it's, in a sense, kind of magnifies the effect.
Yeah.
But we all start operating together and operating as one when we do something with a common goal.
Yes.
That's why I think it's the power of small groups is so immense, whether it's your group is your office group or your neighborhood or whatever. I mean, I saw this in my own neighborhood when we had a big phone company trying to put phone towers in our neighborhood. We all got together and very singularly fought it, just a little group of housewives brigade, and we saw them off, one of the giants of British industry.
Yeah, there's no question, Lynn, that this somehow works when you collectively think about it. Can somebody screw it up, though? You know, can one individual taint what the other seven, for example, are doing?
It may well be the case. I think, though, that probably the majority will prevail. It depends on how focused they are.
Explain that.
Well, I think, again, what we were talking about is what really works best is a highly focused mind state. And if the other seven are really experienced at focusing together, I think they can probably override that eighth person.
Well, that could be. Lynn, give us your websites, would you?
Sure. For The Bond, it's www.thebond.net. That's for that Bond handbook and all that free stuff for rebuilding your community. The Intention Experiment is theintentionexperiment.com. And for What Doctors Don't Tell You, it's wddty.com.
wddty.com. We're going to come back. Final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about the afterlife and then open lines here on Coast to Coast AM. And when we come back with Lynn McTaggart, as we talk about her new work, The Bond, let's take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Lynn, how can you use this in your everyday life to accomplish things, to get things done?
Well, you know, I think one of the things, first of all, is to learn how to do it. As I mentioned earlier, the whole idea of intention is, you know, people think that, well, I'll just have a thought, but most of us aren't very good intenders. And it starts with a really good focused mind. And also sending it out from your heart, I think that's really important. Plus being specific. You know, most people fail at intention because they're not very specific. They don't tell the universe what they really want. They'll say something like, I want to be rich. Now, they think they might want to be rich, but they actually don't mean, I want more stuff. What they mean is, I want to change my job, or I want more free time, or I want to be with my children more, or something like that, or I want to pursue my hobbies, or I want, you know, I want something different in my life. They don't necessarily mean I want more stuff. So, you know, I think it's really important to let the universe know. There's this wonderful example of former Mrs. Paul McCartney, Heather McCartney, who was desperate, Heather Mills, desperate to be famous. And I think she forgot to tell the universe what she wanted, because after she married Paul McCartney and that marriage broke up, you know, reporters started really delving into her life and found out that, you know, she'd done porn films and photos and things like that. And that was splashed all over the newspapers. And I think that, you know, she became infamous. So I think that, you know, she got famous, but not for the reason she wanted. So I think, you know, it's really important to tell the universe exactly what you want more than anything else. And I also always tell George, I tell people to try and experiment in their own life. Try something that never has happened. For instance, if you're a woman and your partner, your husband, your partner never brings you flowers, send an intention for that and see what happens. I've had plenty of people do this in my classes, and they'll tell me it is amazing. One woman told me, you know, my husband never brings me flowers, and we went to a garden center, and he ran away and brought back a big pot of gardenias while we were waiting in line. And I said, what is that? And he said, it was like I was hearing a voice in my head telling me to get this for you. So, you know, practice in your life and you'll see how well this stuff works.
All right, back to the phones we go. Final segment, Jonathan in Miami, Florida. Hi, John, go ahead.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, you know what? All over the world, different scientists, different artists visualize and they draw how our human Homo sapien, how our species right now in 2013, how we would look in the future. And all the artists painted similar picture with our eyes bulging out and our heads growing bigger. And what I'm calling to say is this: we have not yet evolved. And I know it sounds crazy. We haven't continued to evolve the way we were supposed to. Basically, it's like somebody pressed a huge pause button and stopped us from evolving. And I think that's what's going on now. From the chemicals that's being put in our food, our soap, our body, you know, like that oil thing that the supplements now, they're trying to tell us that, you know what, they don't want us to sort of utilize supplements so we can medicate ourselves. They want to give us medication themselves. They want us to be under medication. I don't buy that about that oil, that fish oil and stuff. I just think that they're trying to stop us from evolving to use our brains. They're dumbing us down with the food and the chemicals, and now they're trying to blackball and blacklist people that make supplements so they could sort of give us the medication themselves. They don't want us to choose, and I think they want us to sort of be like zombies or whatever, so they could dumb us down, keep us dumbed down so we can't use our minds and our brains. But guess what? People that's living away from this country and that's eating natural food, they're more in the element to use their brains sort of to move things, and I think they're not going to be able to stop it. You know, maybe I might have to get rid of all my clothes and just be naked or something, or not eat the food, but I don't know what it is, but they're trying to keep us dumbed down, and I believe that they're doing that in the chemicals, and I just wanted to say that.
Well, there's your statement. But Lynn, if you can fight back against, let's say, tyranny and oppression and control, can you do it with what you've been talking about tonight?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it completely starts with intention. And as I say, it is magnified by the power of a small group. And I think, you know, all of us need to do this now. We need to start with our own small groups. And, you know, I'm sure so many people listening on this program are spiritual seekers. I think that's the definition of your, you know, your show, George. But I think it's also important now to become spiritual activists because, you know, there is a small window of time to change things. And I think things are at a critical point right now. We are all feeling that something important is going on. We have to be participants in making that happen. And I think that starts with the intention to change and to start small.
I think some people
in your
are
own
concerned.
Office.
Don't you? Some people are concerned about that impending whatever.
I think we all are, but I think what's really the message today is that we have the power to change things. You know, our life is in our hands, and the future life, for our children, we are probably the most important generation that's ever lived, because we can determine whether or not the whole human race is extinct. I mean, it is that important and serious. What we're doing now will not only affect our children, but children for all time. So we have to make that decision, I think, that it is important to use our intention to change. And we can start, I mean, I've written about this at great length in The Bond, the whole idea that we need to reframe our lives with connection, and we can start in our neighborhoods. We can start with our smaller communities, making connections, making changes, changing the way we do stuff so that it's not polarized and divisive the way it is now, but connected. And we can start also with, as I say, the power of small group intention. I usually tell people to get together just with themselves and their neighbors, do an intention to lower crime in their neighborhood, see what happens. Do an intention to, raise the grade point average of their kids by a point or two. See what happens.
I think most people, Lynn, would be more apt to do this on their own rather than with a group. That's just my feeling.
I think probably you're right, George, because people feel funny about asking, but they probably also have a group of like-minded souls. I mean, I know more and more people, well, I know because there are, hundreds of them now on my website, of people who have created these little pods and are using them in really effective ways. But even if people want to use it on their own, it's about just learning the techniques and starting to practice. It's like intention is like, playing the piano. It gets better with practice.
Chico, California we go. Hello, Kevin. Take it away.
George?
Hi, Kev.
How you doing, George?
Good, Kevin. Go ahead.
My question, Lynn, you are just phenomenal. This whole intention, the power of intention, it's just... It's taken over my life, and it's so real. And I just want to appreciate that you are on this air, and you're letting all these coast-to-coast listeners to understand how deep and how real it really is and how it affects people's lives. And
thank you.
You were on What to Bleep, the DVD,
mm-hmm.
and also the Quantum Edition and all that. And... It's phenomenal. It's changed my life. I can't stop watching it over and over and over. All the quantum physicists on that. I mean, it's phenomenal. And so my question is, I'm just wondering if are you guys ready to do another series?
How fun that you asked this question. As we speak, the producers of The Bleep, I hope they're okay about me saying this, are filming a new one, including me. So, yeah, we're going to be doing a new one.
Excellent. Subject matter, of course, will be The Bond, no doubt.
Well, we'll be definitely talking about what's happened, because it's 10 years since The Bleep came out, believe it or not. And so much has happened in quantum physics and its application now to our real life. And that's really what I want to talk about. How do you take this into your life? How do you live the field?
Let's go next to Will in New York, east of the Rockies. Hi, Will.
Hey, how you doing, George, and your guest?
Good.
A fella mentioned faith a few minutes ago. I think faith and intention is pretty much the same thing. It's just through religion, it has a different way of getting to the end result. I think the gift was that the power is within us, and that's what Linda's saying, that's what Jesus said. But religion would have you think that you need to go to an outside source. I think the gift was that, you know, the creative universe is giving us that gift already in a bank, and we just got to find the code to get that power individually.
I like that, Lynn. What do you think?
I like that idea, too, is that's it, is just finding the code to find that individually. And I think that is about practice. As you say, there's something very, you know, similar in faith and prayer to intention. I think the difference is intention is your request to the universe. Oftentimes with prayer, it is a surrender. Thy will be done. You fix this for me. You help me with this. And with intention, it is more, I suppose, generated from you.
Yeah, I think so too. Let's take a few more calls. We'll go to Nancy in Plymouth, Minnesota. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure,
Lynn, when I grew up, we had slumber parties and everything, and always at the slumber parties, we would have one person lie down, and we would gather, whether we could do it with two people, three people, four people. So there'd be two people on either side of the person that's lying down, one at the head and one at the feet. And we'd each slide just two fingers underneath the body, you know, both our hands.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd say, concentrate. Then the next person would say it. And there's the whole thing that we would chant all the way around and not really chant, but just repeat it. And then, at the end, it would be, you are as light as a feather and as stiff as a board, lift. And we would just, this person would just float, and we would just lift them up, up, up. And our arms would be over our head. We used to do it all the time. And I was just wondering how that worked. Our teacher wouldn't believe us, and we did it with the biggest boy in the class, just us girls, with like four girls. And she couldn't believe it.
I always thought it was a trick, Lynn, but I guess it's not.
Absolutely not. I've seen this happen too. You know, I think it is about the power of the group, the power of intention, and, you know, and all of that. And there could even be an element of hypnosis in it too. But it is, you know, it just demonstrates to us the whole idea of group consciousness, group resonance, and also just consciousness in general, and that it can override the, you know, the heaviness of the body.
Joan in Riverside, California, you're up with us, Joni. Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for your show. You guys are wonderful. And Lynn, you are wonderful. I just wanted to say that I have been thinking about this subject, and of course, I think everyone is, and that thinking about the God particle and thinking that, you know, if someone came up with the formula that would show that we're all one, it could really change the whole paradigm of the planet. And my son happens to be a physicist, and I asked him, well, you know, what is the formula that shows this? And he said, I don't know, Mom. You figure it out and tell me. So I've been trying to figure it out, and what it seems to me is that it is self-evident. And it seems to me that you are showing that in your work, the bond, that we are so connected. We're all made out of the same stuff. And so if that is the case, then, you know, we're all one. And so collectively, all the mistakes that are being made, we're all making. You know, in some way, and I think also that it's going to take, you know, really everyone to realize that my body, my background is body work, and Virginia Satir of People Making, she talks about the fact that. Throughout the eons, mankind has always tried to, you know, fight wars, to make democracy, and yet we seem to have this deep-seated attitude that, you know, someone has to dominate, somebody has to control, and seems to have gotten out of hand. And anyway, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, yeah, I think it's going to take everybody to come on board and understand that if anyone is hurt for anyone's benefit, it actually hurts all of us. And that the golden key, you know, do unto others as you would have others do unto you, it's no longer a, you know, it's a spiritual ideal. It seems now it's an imperative on this planet.
Well, let me ask you this, Lynn, because we only got about a minute left. Mm-hmm. I think that most people on this planet are good, positive people. Yet we've got a small core of people who are not greedy, manipulative, controlling. They seem to have as much power as the rest of the masses do. How do they do that?
Well, I think that it's because we've allowed it. We have bought into and allowed a certain kind of paradigm of I win, you lose. And I think what's really important is to understand that we can change that paradigm to I win only if you win too. I win and you win too. And that can still be something that we can use as the kind of paradigm of our lives. And that's really what I'm talking about. As our just last caller said, we're all part of this. So we all have to decide that we are not going to live this way, not for one more day. And if we start small with intention, our own lives, you will have a ripple effect that can change the world.
I think you're right. Lynn, I want to thank you for being on the program once again. Lynn McTaggart. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.